Chris, can you hear me bitching okay through the mic here?
I guess Jimmy Moreland's starting now.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the DC Sports Brain Trust. My name is Rune. I'm your host and moderator, joined as always by three of my good friends, the best damn sports analysts around, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Gentlemen, my favorite, you know what my favorite Future song is? March Madness, which is exactly what season we're in. March Madness is back, baby. We out here. I've already predicted JMU to win the entire tournament. We're gonna get it this year.
Wow, that's... JMU's not in the tournament though, so that's gonna be kind of difficult.
He wrote it in the
this
bracket.
This crayon. This really
yeah, it's like, you know, the presidency, they let you write in your vote. Varun writes in JMU just in all the slots. It's just a bracket that says James Madison University everywhere. You know.
So West Virginia
versus Morehead State, JMU wins.
JMU wins.
Exactly. So, well, here's the thing. So, basically, what I've done is that I've gone through the March Madness bracket, and like every number one seed, I've just crossed out and wrote JMU. So, like Gonzaga, it's not Gonzaga anymore. It's JMU, for example. we're going off of that.
Okay. All
right. But anyway, enough about my really, really dumb March Madness brackets. Let's get into some DC sports, and let's start with hockey. The Washington Capitals, your former Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals, are now second, I repeat, second in the East, challenging the New York Islanders on a huge, huge streak. Gentlemen, this is great news. The Caps are second in the East. Want to get your all's thoughts, get your all's reactions to how they've been playing so far, things they've done really well, things can improve upon. How do we get to first in the East? Chris, want to start with you on this.
Well, Samsonov and the goaltending and the defense still have to play better. That's the end of the day. They're still giving up way too many goals per game. Third period especially has been very shaky. They've almost lost a couple of games the past week or two just in the third period. They probably should have lost them, but they luckily won them in overtime or a shootout. So that's pretty much the short of it. His third period play's got to improve, and defense got to improve outside of one Nick Jensen, who has been playing out of his mind recently. Probably the best I've personally seen him play since he arrived on the NHL scene. So, Nick, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think Samsonov needs to up his game a little bit more. You know, obviously he's still coming back from kind of the delayed layoff with the COVID case that he had. You know, I think his save percentage is like just above 900, and it was like a little over 91 last year. So he's trended slightly downward. I think we haven't lost with him in goal yet, but I would like to see a little bit of an improvement from him. I think a little more of Samsonov and Vanecek going back and forth, and I think hopefully they both improve with that. I do want to highlight that I think Jacob Vrana, ever since he got put down to the fourth line, has really stepped his game up. I think he's kind of under the radar. He's having about the year that I wanted him to have. I'd like to see him keep going, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, you know, overall, we're doing pretty damn well, and power play's doing well. We're scoring a lot of points, and you know, we're right where we need to be in the division run or in the division race. You know, the Islanders are kind of playing crazy good right now, but I think we're right where we want to be in second place. You know, as long as we keep it up, we're fine. What do you think, Raul?
I think about the same. I just want to emphasize how bad our third period play has been. When you're, like, watching games, you see the social media team just hyping up that we keep on scoring, and then suddenly it's just like, oh, we lost the game 4-3. Like, it's always been this brutal collapse in the third period that I'm not sure who to really pin it on. Like, the easy target is obviously the defense, but like, it could also be a coaching thing. It's just kind of weird that we've been this has been common for us, and I've never really seen a Caps team that has collapsed on third periods as much as this one. But yeah, we're in a good position despite the collapses, and I've been kind of thinking that we're in a position like we're heading towards the expansion draft, but the trade deadline. Do you all think there's anyone that's going to be traded, or anyone that we're going to trade for, or like any different additions to the team?
I doubt it. I mean, like, there's not really a weak link, I think, on the team right now. They just have to improve their third period play, and I don't think there's really anybody in the on the market that the Capitals A, could get, or B, want to get. It's kind of the ones they would want to get are probably too expensive for the cap space, one, and then two, just the things that they could give up for them. And then the guys who they could get, they don't want because they wouldn't be able to replace anyone. And even if they did, why would you bring somebody in when you've got a couple of guys that we can call up to give them a try? That would be just as worth it as trying to get mediocre guys in the trade market.
Well, one of those guys is one Connor McMichael. There are some rumors that he is going to be raised back up to the taxi squad.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good decision? Is he someone that we could see provide some value to the team? Or is that something that perhaps may not work out as well?
I'm sorry, go ahead, Nick.
I think it's all right. He's a very, very young, very limited in experience with both, you know, Hershey and with the Caps. So, you know, I think there's a lot of room for him there's a lot of work for him to do, and I don't see why he can't do it on the taxi squad and practicing with the team a little bit more and maybe getting some playing time with the team. I think that's fine. I don't think we're, you know, there should be no expectation to rely on him in any way this year as a contributor to the Capitals. But, you know, it doesn't hurt for him to be in the taxi squad practicing with the team. And I don't know. That's what I think. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for him not to be on it. I agree. We probably will see him at least get called up for the playoff push, I imagine. Because they usually bring up like two or three prospects, even if they're not going to play. They bring them up pretty much for free, essentially. But yeah, well, I'm sure we'll see him at some point towards the end.
I bet we will.
Through 12 games with the Hershey Bears right now, he's got 4 goals and 3 assists, which is okay. I mean, it's not incredible. It's not terrible. It's just kind of meh. Hopefully he can kind of pick it up and start producing more points-wise. But outside of that, yeah, he'd be the most likely I'd see get caught up towards the end. Rahul?
Yeah, no, sorry. I was just thinking about just, like, we could probably call him up if we have secured a playoff berth. But other than that, kind of agreeing with what you guys said. One thing I wanted to bring up, and we were talking about it in weeks between pods, was, is there really a noticeable difference between the two goalies? Is there a difference between Vanecek and Samsonov? Because their save percentage is very similar. Samsonov obviously had less games played, but I don't really think there's been much change.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty similar, I'd say, for production. I'm hoping Vanecek continues to improve more because I see a higher ceiling for Vanecek since he is younger.
Vanecek's older.
He is?
Yeah.
Vanecek's 25. I think Samsonov's 23. But Samsonov's got a little more experience in the big leagues, but Vanecek had played a little bit longer.
Yeah, I would say Samsonov played earlier, but
yeah,
Vanecek's older.
Well, maybe we'll see.
But they're both young.
I'm just seeing Vanecek improve at a faster rate than Samsonov is.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because he's older, I don't know.
That's kind of what I think. I think, you know, he's played a little bit more.
Yeah.
Been in the order a little bit longer.
Do you think we'll see Lundqvist at all, or is it just, like, a pipe dream?
Nah.
Not this year. He's already...
They might, like, have him around the team for the playoffs.
Like a cheerleader kind of type?
Basically. Right. I mean... But I don't see them having him play anything. Even if he does, like, I don't trust him to play at a higher level than Samsonov or Vanecek. So why would I keep a third goalie on the squad for essentially no reason? It doesn't make that much sense to me. Outside of moral support, like, and he can do that without being on the roster.
Yeah.
He can be a player, like a player coach without being on the roster, which I think would be smart for them. And I think that's what they're doing. That's why we've kind of seen him at the rink with the team a little bit. But outside of that, yeah, I don't see him playing for the Capitals this year, if this year or maybe ever. Because at this rate, no reason to keep him around when Samsonov and Vanecek have already had a year under their belt. Samsonov, 2 years.
One other thing to discuss, and, you know, I think this may be something that has been kind of going around in the community, is in regards to some of the goalie play. And I know we touched on this earlier, but just wanted to get a kind of a reaffirmation on this, is that you got Vanecek and you got Samsonov. Would you guys say there's been an improvement in goalie play, or is there work to be done?
Didn't we just talk about that?
There's work to be done. Statistically speaking, we're not having as good of a year in the net as we generally would with Holtby playing most of the games. Both guys are like just above 900 in terms of their save percentage. And frankly, you want to be more like in the 92 percentage area, so like 920, which is around, you know, like Holtby's better years were like 930, late night, you know, like upper 930. But you probably want to be above 91 at least. And so, you know, like...
Sometimes Holtby just had, like, chaotic games where, like, nothing was going right for him, and then he put out a streak of consistency where he's, like, saving everything. Like, with these guys, you're not really getting that as much. Like, you're, like... They're saving the shots you expect to save, and they're... And I feel like Vanecek, out of the two, is missing out on a lot of easy saves. But, I mean, their save percentage is pretty similar.
Yeah. Well, since coming back from COVID, Samsonov, he's 4-0-0 with a .915 save percentage and 2.5 goals against average. So that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I don't know why. I was thinking he was much worse.
No, he's been better than at the beginning of the season.
For sure. And Vanecek, the other thing was that he was on such a pretty long streak of starts, and
right,
kind of toward the back end of that, he started to falter a little because he needed a little bit of a break.
He played like 18 games in a row, or I forget the exact number.
They had to bring Craig Anderson into a couple games because Vanecek needed some time off.
Yeah, I mean, that's unheard of for any goalie, let alone a rookie goalie, to play that many games in a row. So I'm surprised, honestly, Vanecek's numbers are as good as they were during that stretch. Because
That was
a lot, and hopefully he doesn't get exhausted. We really need Samsonov to play more games, to be honest. These injuries keep nagging Samsonov, so he hasn't even played more than 2-3 games in a row at this point, which is not ideal. So we're going to need some more production out of him, or Vanecek, I'm sure, is going to collapse by the back end of the playoffs.
I think the ideal scenario, kind of toward the back end of this season and going into the playoffs, is a situation where we've got them rotating and that is helping both of them elevate their game.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if one guy is going to emerge as the starter for the whole playoffs, But, you know, if we can get to a scenario where they're playing, you know, one after the other, they're rotating and things are good for both of them, I don't see why you can't bring that into the playoffs.
I'd like for them to just have one goaltender for the playoffs. I'm not really a big fan of rotational playoff goalies because I think it's better for the team to know what's behind them in net all the time versus, you know, some of the time. So I like just having the one guy back there. I know the Bruins have done that in the past, especially last year with their two goalies, Halak and forget the other guy.
Yeah, it's not a common thing to rotate in the playoffs.
Yeah, but it has happened. Like I said, the Bruins did it last year.
I originally figured that we would carry somebody into the playoffs as like the guy. Yeah, we wouldn't know who that would be yet. But you know, there's still a lot of season left, so we'll see.
Well, we brought Grubauer into the playoffs when the Caps won the Stanley Cup, and they brought in Holtby, and they ended up winning it.
So that could be, I mean, that could be the way to go too. Is you could start the playoffs going back and forth, and if one guy has a really good game, play him again, play him again. You know, see where it goes.
Right? I think that's probably what they're gonna do. They're gonna go into it saying, "Hey, you're the guy," but
at any given time,
I wouldn't say this to anyone, but like. In your own, in the coach's room, probably say amongst each other, like, hey, if he's playing poorly, we got to try out Vanek or Samsonov, whichever guy is the guy not playing.
Yeah. I think mental fatigue is real, especially in the playoffs, and you're switching between goalies. Like, I don't think there's real, like, resentment for, like, getting benched before play. It's just, like, what can you do that can best help your team? It's, like, is it you sitting out and just, like, watching, or is it, like, you playing an actual impact?
Well, that's when Lundqvist comes in to
that's where Lundqvist
to be like, hey, man, it's for the good of the team.
It's like some cheesy hockey movie that he just gears up as, like, God.
Brought to you by Disney. Oh.
The Mighty Capitals.
Yes, the Mighty, Mighty Capitals. Good stuff. Now, let us talk about football.
Why did you whisper it into my ear like that? Now, let's talk about
football. I'm doing an ASMR thing.
Oh God.
all right.
That kind of pod.
Go. All right.
One of the streamers I watch does ASMR at the end of the stream sometimes. So I'm like, I'm getting out of here.
It gets weird. Like yeah. You're not expecting it, but even though you are, it's just the tonal shift is odd.
It's, like, I tried watching it just out of curiosity for, like, one night. I was like, I'm going to give this a chance because I'd never, like, listened to or see what, like, they actually do with it. And the whole time I was just cringing. It's like, the fuck is this?
So we're leading our listeners to the end of the pod where Varun will recite some ASMR as we go over the Wizards.
Big facts. All right. Going into football. Legal tampering has started. And by the way, today I learned that legal tampering is an actual term used in football. From the 15th of March, when we're recording this at noon, to March 17th at 4 o'clock, legal tampering is happening around the NFL. And teams are now allowed to speak with agents about signings and things of that nature. So far for the Washington football team, one signing has been made, and that is one Dustin Hopkins. He is on a one-year, $2.5 million deal.
Hell yeah.
And that was well predicted earlier.
Best signing of the offseason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some other things is Brandon Scherf has been franchise tagged, or rather, has it officially, right? Has been franchise tagged?
He signed it. He's been tagged for all intents and purposes. All
right. So Brandon Scherf officially has the franchise tag. Rahul, I want to start with you on this, and I know that you have a lot to say when it comes to this legal tampering. And we'll get into, like, some of the other positions a little later on. But right now, I want to talk just about Dustin Hopkins signing and the Brandon Scherf franchise tag. Does it sit right with you, or do you feel like the Washington football team could be doing more?
I felt like I went through, like, those stages of grief kind of thing. You know, like, the acceptance stage, that's the bargaining stage, and all that bullshit. But I was originally thinking that the purpose of the tag wasn't that they were really planning on giving him a long-term deal, and they were trying to pawn him off for, like, a trade piece or something along those lines. But now, I just think that the tag was kind of imposed by Brandon's agent. And Brandon, because they were too far apart in negotiations, they're like, we'll just take the tag. And they really wanted to see what the Patriots, the ex-Patriots guard, Joe Thoney, would get in free agency. And he scored a $16 million average deal, like 5 years, which is very impressive. And that's like almost two mil better than the previous highest guard's value per year, which is in Brandon Brooks, who unrelated the Eagles are trying to trade. But other than that, that's kind of insane. And I think Sherv and his agent are going back to Rivera, and they were like, yo, this is the floor for what you're going to get. Like, if you want to sign Brandon, you better pony up 16 mil at minimum, and we'll talk from there. So this is kind of put some strain. And honestly, I don't think Brandon Scherf, in terms of availability, is better than the guard that just signed. So it'll be an interesting piece, like, where they'll talk from there. Maybe they'll go lower than 16, but I kind of doubt it. So, because Joe Thuney is also an all-pro guard, and he's younger than Brandon Scherf by a good amount. So it's going to be an interesting scenario how it plays out. And a lot of reporters are saying Brandon Scherf's just going to play out the year on the tag and then hit free agency. What do you think will happen with that compared to the landscape in what's in the NFL right now, Nick?
I don't know. This Brandon Scherf tag is... I'm kind of mixed on it. I think also the best deal would have been if we could have tagged and traded him, but just in this environment, that was probably never going to happen because there are so many guards being let go, you know, with all the teams trying to get under the reduced salary cap. So paying Brandon Scherf, I think the thinking into this decision was that there's no guarantee that they can get one of those other guards in free agency, because we got turned down by a lot of people in free agency last year because, you know, as a team, we're not very good. Obviously, we had the kind of a turnaround last year, but I still think our reputation within the league is probably still damaged. So there's no guarantee that you can get a Feliciano or a Zeitler. So I think their thinking was, we'll give Scherf kind of the crazy salary for one more year and take care of the right guard spot. And I think with this tag, inevitably, we're not going to sign Scherf long term. I think that giving him that $18 million year just gives him too much negotiating power in terms of the next contract. And I don't think that we need to be stuck in a ridiculous guard contract. you know, we're going to have two drafts. We're going to have this draft and the next draft to find somebody that can replace Scherf. And it could already be somebody on the roster.
Yeah.
It could be a Sadiq Charles that we convert to guard. It could be a Keith Ishmael, the guy that we drafted last year. Or it could be somebody within the next two drafts that we could find to replace Scherf. So we have time. So I kind of get that line of thinking. You know, if we can't attract like a whole lot of big free agents, you may as well pay somebody, and paying Scherf a one-year deal, I kind of get it. But I think we're also inevitably saying that we're not going to sign him long-term, and I'm good with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, like, at this point, the stars kind of just don't line up between the two sides. Like, he's going to want his money, and he's probably going to get it. But the Washington football team doesn't really need to pay him that because they do have other options that we've discussed a little bit in the past of the other positions on the offensive line with question marks of who to keep and who to cut. So maybe you do transition one of those guys over to guard, or you kind of bring up the draft and you can probably get at least somebody to a much cheaper option.
On that topic of people that we wanted to keep and the holes we wanted to fill, we actually did lose Ronald Darby over to the Broncos for 3 years, 30, and which is kind of cheap, I thought, for a pretty good corner. And we're not really able to land some of the targets that I know Ron Rivera has been looking into, and Aguilar and Rashawn Jenkins. So it's kind of we weren't really starved for cap. We were like the sixth most, I think, when we started out, and we went to seventh most in cap. So that sure tag wasn't the big deal. That $18 million wasn't that big of a deal. But you can't help but think it's just like, did this make them more cautious with signing other free agents? And it kind of conflicts with the message that they said that they were going to take big swings at free agency. And so far in this day, you only seen Dustin Hopkins get signed. So maybe they are missing a lot and they haven't been able to sign their key agents like Ronald Darby, for instance. And we could probably see KPL go. So far it's not looking that great for WFT free agency, but it could go better tomorrow or the day after. There's still some time.
If we lose Kevin Pierre-Louis, it becomes a big problem because then you lose two guys on the defense that were at least
giving
you a decent floor. Yeah, so, I mean, they weren't like... I mean, Darby was pretty good, you know. We can debate if he was worth $10 million a year, and that's fine. I would have paid him because I think you're only guaranteeing his salary for 2 years, and I think we could have easily done that with him. And I think he would have played fine 2 years, and then after that, it's like you can get rid of him if you have to. But besides that, we're creating more holes on our roster and on our defense, and we need to now find another cornerback to start opposite of Kendall Fuller. Is it Jimmy Moreland?
Go Dukes!
I'm not convinced that Jimmy Moreland's...
I think he deserves a shot. He's been here for a few years.
Has he played enough?
Yeah. I think he deserves a chance. It's just like with his size, you wonder if he's like going to get injured pretty quickly and then, you know, fall off a cliff after that. But I think he's played pretty fine. He could probably shore up that spot. But I was thinking more along the lines of Kendall Fuller really played an elite level when he was in the slot. We don't have that second outside corner to pair with Moreland. So if we could get that, we'd have a lockdown secondary. Maybe that's a draft question. Maybe it's a free agency question. But if you do that, yeah, probably. And because this D-line is still very, very good, it can make cornerbacks look better than they're supposed to. So you can sign someone average in free agency. Like, we took a chance on Darby, and it paid out big dividends. We could take a chance out on some other guys like Kelo Witherspoon or Garion Conley. And maybe they'll really strike gold for us. But yeah, it's kind of disheartening to see our guys go, even though they were saying they were going to re-sign them.
Well, that always happens. Like,
yeah, I guess it's
players always say that they want to re-sign with the team. Like, Anthony Rendon said the same thing. I'm pretty sure Bryce Harper said the same thing at some point before the end of the season. Guys always say they want to return because it's a PR move.
I guess it's kind of weird because, like, we were actually, like, sort of a good team. So, like, having good pieces leave and, like, kind of, like, it's like, we need you guys, don't we? Like, don't we need this?
It's weird thinking, instead of just having a shit team lose shit players, you have a good team losing good players. Hopefully this means they have other options that they want to go, and these guys just didn't fit in the options that the Washington football team has for the season. They still have, I think, a solid amount of money to play with during this offseason. There's still a solid amount of guys on the board.
None of the wide receivers have really gone off the
board. Yeah, I mean, outside of Aguilar, like, I'm pretty sure he's the only big name that's gone off the board. So there's still time just at wide receiver. And then there's a bunch of other guys at the other positions as well that you can find. Not even mentioning if you could try to find a trade partner around the draft or not close to the season. There's still options, and I'm sure they've got plans in line for replacing these guys and upgrading some of the other guys.
I really hope they find a wide receiver.
Yeah. I think that's, class. That's a must-have, I think. Curtis Samuel?
Yeah.
Or Kenny Galladay?
Yeah, either of them would be good, I think.
The biggest goal is to take some heat off of Terry, because right now teams are just doubling him, they're bracketing him. They know he's our only big receiving threat, so it's just like, why even bother setting extra people on Logan Thomas? Or, like, who can only find, like, options in zone coverage. Like, you need to be able to have another guy. And they realized that before the season even started when they swung big at Amari Cooper and weren't able to land him, giving him like a $100 million contract. He elected to stay with the Cowboys. So they have identified it as a problem and they're trying to address it. It's just, can they address it with the guy still there? Like, can Galladay fill that role? And he could technically fill it for cheaper, but, like, he's also injured a lot, and he's kind of, like, needs a QB that really trusts him because he doesn't gain much separation. He's more of a contested catch kind of guy. So,
all right, Heinicke, here we go.
Here we go, Heinicke.
That brings it to the next part of the conversation when it comes to free agents now, doesn't it? The one that we've been hyping up. The one big, big question mark going into this season, which is the general, the field general position, the quarterback position. There are a lot of free agents or a lot of people that we could potentially sign. And I want to get into this because I'm very excited to hear the different perspectives that we got going on here. We'll start with the first, probably one of the more welcomed suggestions to the team. Is one Mitch Trubisky. There's some pros and there's some cons under him for Mitch.
I want to hear the leader of this push kind of introduce this idea.
That's true. Yeah, why don't we have the leader?
Let's hear what Nick, Trubisky's number one fan, has to say.
Come on, Nick. Tell us why Mitch Trubisky is the best option at quarterback for the Washington football team.
Well, there are a number of reasons why he's the best option. Number one, realistically speaking, you get him on a reasonable 2-year deal. The money's basically irrelevant. Costs you no draft picks. People are talking about Deshaun Watson and giving up like 5 first round picks and like 2 studs on defense. It's like you're stripping apart your whole team. Trubisky has taken the Chicago Bears to 12 and 10 win seasons, and he can do that here. Like, as far as I'm concerned, with Kyle Allen and Heinicke, I think if our defense plays as well as it did last year, I think we're a 9 win team, and I think Trubisky ups the floor to closer to 11 wins. That doesn't mean he's great, but I think he's gotten a bit of a bad rap because he went before Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, has he underperformed as the second pick? Without a doubt. But I still think he raises our ceiling. I think he's realistically easy to get and doesn't cost anything, and he makes the quarterback room better. It doesn't fully take you out of the equation to draft a quarterback if the opportunity presents itself, but it does take a lot of pressure off, and then we could address something like cornerback at 19 overall, or another need that would really help the defense. So that's my main argument for Trubisky. I think he raises the ceiling just enough, and I think he'll be durable. He'll play 16 games. He provides a mobility aspect that Rivera seems to want. And, you know, I think Scott Turner, this would be his moment to, you know, step up to the plate and start swinging for the team. You know, Jack Del Rio and Rivera have made some pretty good contributions, and this will be Scott Turner's opportunity. Yeah. See what he can do with Trubisky.
And if Trubisky succeeds under Scott Turner, that's giving him some HC kind of nods. Like, you were able to rework a quarterback. Like, you could do that for our team kind of thing and still manage it. So I think Scott Turner would also be intrinsically motivated to see what he can mold with the Mitch Trubisky bunch of clay. But there are some cons to Trubisky. There's a reason why the Bears didn't take his 5th-year option. He has played with a very stacked offensive line and a lot of playmakers. They had A-Rob for so long, and A-Rob is produced, but Mitch Trubisky has not really produced with him. And there are big games like the Saints playoffs games where Trubisky completely looked deflated and lost and just terrible. He did not look like the leader that you would want at the QB position. So there are some things that may not be able to be worked through, including his mechanics, but He also offers a lot to play, and I think he is the best free agent quarterback out there.
Well, there are still other options I want to explore, personally, if I was in that position, because I'm not a fan of Trubisky, really. But there's other guys that I really do like. But let's continue going on the list, and I'll say who I think I'm a big fan of. Let's start with this next guy, Sam Darnold. He's not a free agent, but he will be available in the offseason. What do y'all think about Sam Darnold?
I don't mind Sam Darnold. I've seen a decent amount of tape of him over the last couple years, and I think he definitely provides a playmaking ability. He has the mobility part of his game, makes some pretty good throws every now and again. Consistency's been a huge issue. Some people compare Darnold to Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill obviously played a couple years under Adam Gase with the Dolphins, and then when he got a fresh start in Tennessee, he completely turned it around. So some people think, maybe Darnold with a new situation could do the same. If they go the Darnold route, I could accept that. That's another opportunity for Scott Turner to really prove himself.
I think Darnold's too far gone.
I have more questions about Darnold than I do Trubisky. Because, Trubisky, we have not very high expectations, but I think he at least raises the ceiling. With Darnold, I think Trubisky at least raises the floor of what we currently have. But with Darnold, he could just completely crash and burn, really, really bad. And then that's just a waste of a draft pick for a guy that flames out even worse here. So I have a little more faith in Trubisky as kind of a safe short-term option. That's kind of what I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure the Dolphins hate using that second-round draft pick, even though they traded to the bottom of it, for Josh Rosen, who really never did anything for them either. And now he's with the 49ers practice squad, I think. So it's kind of a big gamble. Can you really fix them? And sometimes you really can't. And that's why I think Sam Darnold is very inherently risky as a prospect compared to Trubisky, who you'd only have to pay for.
Yeah, and I always had some doubt about Sam Darnold coming out of college just because...
You just hate USC. You just don't think any USC QB can succeed in the NFL.
That was part of it, but
Carson Palmer.
It was really just his game. His game was just so big on improvisation, and not a lot of guys succeed in the NFL that way. Roethlisberger's kind of the one guy I can think of that's done it consistently, but Darnold, there was always the wow factor in college with some of the plays that he made. But he also got away with a lot of stuff in college that, so I was just never big on Darnold as a top five pick coming out of that draft. So I think that's kind of come to fruition with the Jets. I think if you're going to bring him here, you'd have to really try and change his game and try and not put a whole lot on his plate. And I don't know if that's something he's capable of doing. Whereas with Trubisky, you don't have to put too much on his plate. And I think if you do it right, he could probably limit his turnovers and do just enough for you to win. And he has done that with the Bears before.
There's another guy I want to bring up. One of my, probably my favorite that I would love to see in the Washington football team. One, Marcus Mariota. I like his play. I think he's a good quarterback. But want to get your all's thoughts on it.
I think you have popular opinion. People really want Marcus Mariota. In fact, there's a report that we actually tried to trade for him, but balked at it because his current contract situation with the Raiders is kind of absurd. That depended on playtime to max out at 20 mil. So we really didn't want to do that. And I think they're kind of waiting for him to get released by the Raiders before they make a move on him. But yeah, I think he would be a real good fit with Scott Turner's system. But the biggest thing that I don't like about Mariota is just the slew of injuries he's had. As running, he doesn't really look as fast as he used to, just because he's been injured so much. And that's been a real big detriment to his game, was his ability to just take off. He ran as fast as RG3 did. He had some ridiculous speed that's no longer being able to be utilized as much. So that's kind of an issue I have with Mariota. And he's also kind of only looked good in a game with the Raiders. And once Tannehill stepped in the Titans, where Mariota was the starting quarterback, he just made the whole offense like kind of hum that Mariota never was able to do. So there's a few things, pretty significant things that I don't like Mariota for. But I think he has a lot going for him. And I wouldn't be mad if we did go with Mariota as opposed to some other the options that we've been thinking of. What do you think, Nick?
I think Mariota's closer to the bottom of my list of guys that I would take a flyer on. I'd almost rather take a flyer on Darnold than Mariota, to be honest. Mainly just because of his body of work with the Titans. You know, I think he just never really put it together there. And, you know, when you're talking about why people are talking about Mariota as an option, it's because of his, like Rahul said, it's the one game that he appeared in with the Raiders this year. And it wasn't like it was like a statistically great game for him. It was just more like a really gutty and clutch performance. They didn't win the game, but, you know, he made a couple really, really good throws when they needed him. So, like, in that one game, like, he did his job really well as a backup. But if you look at his statistics from that game, like, there's nothing that, like, there's no, like, wow factor. It's not like he came in and threw, like, four touchdowns. I think he threw for a touchdown, he ran for a touchdown, and he had a couple really, really good throws. But, you know, I think it's hard to judge the possibility. I think it's hard to judge him based on the one game, and you have to more look at his body work with the Titans. And, you know, just with the Titans overall, he was, you know, he was just not good enough.
Yeah.
So I would expect something similar here. And, you know, can you modify his game a little bit to where he's managing the games for you, kind of like Alex Smith, but fewer turnovers and more mobility? You know, I guess I could kind of see that. You know, maybe that's
possible.
He's
had very different styles of offense, too, coming from Oregon. Like, they were running spread and Chip Kelly kind of like deal, and then they went over. He went over to the Titans, who ran initially a smash mouth approach with what's his face, the guy that got fired after a playoff. Yeah.
Oh no, who got fired
after a playoff appearance?
The head coach for the Titans.
Yeah, and
Mike Munchak.
Yeah, yeah. So after that, he got moved to the Arthur Smith system. That didn't last long. And then he moved over to the Raiders with the West Coast offense. Like, those are very different types of offense. And if he moved here under Scott Turner, we'll go back to Eric Auriel, which is also very different. So he's going to have to try and master these different types of offense systems to try and prove a result, which is, like, with Sam Darnold and Mitch Trubisky, you could argue they're more, like, multiple balls of clay. But, like, there's a lot going on with Mariota and what he's had to go through in terms of offenses learned. So, yep, that's pretty much my thoughts on him.
I would say this about Mariota, though. If you're looking for, like, if you're looking for someone to play the role of Alex Smith 2 years ago, where he makes the plays with his legs when he needs to, he does just enough for you to win, and he doesn't turn the ball over, Mariota could maybe fill that role, but they would have to get something out of him that you haven't really seen from him in the NFL yet. And that would be, you know, don't put too much on his plate and hope that that kind of pans out that way, where he's not making too many turnovers and he's not having to do a whole lot.
That,
so there's a risk there.
Rookie game he played against, it was Bucks Titans, where he and James Woodson, who was going to put on this list, but it's reported that the Saints want him back, really went at it. And it was just like, wow, these quarterbacks could be something special. And they've just never been able to pan to that later in their career. So, yeah.
I think Winston's going to stay with the Saints.
Yep.
And I think he knows that's his best shot to succeed in the league.
I think if he was available, he'd probably be the best prospect in free agency. I just don't think he fits what Rivera really wants in terms of a leader and like all the other string of off-the-field incidents he's had. But I think talent-wise, he's been able to chuck bombs down the field.
He threw 33 touchdowns and 5,000 yards just a year ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like he can't play at this level. It's just he threw too many picks.
Maybe the eye surgery, like it helped Carlos Rogers way back when he left, will help Jameis Winston as he becomes the new Saints quarterback. Screw Taysom Hill.
Yeah. Taysom Hill is not their quarterback.
The sake of time, I do want to get to some of the last quarterbacks that we have on this list. I'll combine them. Got one Ryan Fitzpatrick and one Andy Dalton as two other potential options.
You mispronounced Ryan Fitzmagic's name.
I apologize. So we have Ryan Fitzmagic.
Hell yeah.
And then we have Andy Dalton.
I think
that is the two other options.
I think we can just skip outright talking about Andy Dalton because Andy Dalton sucks. There is nothing good about his game. He looked pretty bad at the end of his Bengals career, and it just full-on deteriorated with the Cowboys. There's no hope.
I mean, and also just I don't see like him being any better than the two quarterbacks that the Washington football team already has on roster.
Right, and also it's weird that it's getting reported he has a strong market, but maybe they mean like strong market in terms of a backup, because I don't see him starting anywhere in the league ever again.
Yeah, like there's literally no reason for a team to sign him as a starter, because one, he's old, two, he's washed, three, there's a lot of other guys.
He's more washed than Ryan Fitzpatrick, and he's younger than Fitzpatrick. It doesn't make any sense. He's just garbage. He's just not
like
a good quarterback.
I could see him being the backup quarterback for a team with a young quarterback that he could help coach up. Because he was pretty good earlier on in his career. But, you know, now he's old and washed.
Yeah, I think at that point earlier in his career, everything was going right for him. They had AJ Green was performing at his prime, and they were going to make more than a one-and-done playoff run, but it just... He got that thumb injury and the helmet. He's just not that great. Ryan Fitzpatrick, though, offers some interest because he just doesn't care. Like, he will throw the ball down the field. He will try and make plays. He'll try and win games, but in doing that, he will have his turnovers and gain his Fitzpatrick label. It kind of gets figured out as the season goes on. I think one of the few Josh Norman picks that he got was against Ryan Fitzpatrick when he was on the Bucs. Yeah, Josh Norman didn't.
But also Ryan Fitzpatrick's got drip, boy. Press conferences would be. Listen, man. The only Washington football team member that beats out Fitzpatrick when it comes to post game drip is Clinton Portis.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that actually.
Chase
I
Young
think
might be on his way there. Yeah, too, but that too. Yeah, Clinton Portis, the legend.
Chase Young does have some great drip.
Yep.
Hey, listen, there's a lot of good opportunities out here for the Washington football team. I guess one last question before
Dude, could you imagine Ryan Fitzpatrick, though, walking into the press conference with Chase Young and that Washington football team chain he bought over the offseason? There was like $20,000 or something like that.
That picture of Ryan Fitzpatrick, the one that we know from the Bucs where he has the shades on, he has the jacket. He said he took it from DeSean Jackson's locker. He just saw it open. He's like, oh shit, that looks cool. So he just puts it on, puts the chain on, and goes to the presser.
I could see him walking in with like some Dior ones on his feet, and for context, those shoes cost about $10,000, depending on the
definitely
size.
Definitely not his Dior ones. It's just some that he found in some player's locker. He's like, wow, that looks cool.
All right, yeah, for sure. But one last question before we move on. When it comes to the Washington football team, do you think that it's smarter to kind of play a little bit conservatively, or would you rather have him going like aggressively after people?
So I can see both sides to that. One thing I didn't like was them, like, they said that they were going to re-sign their own guys, and I mentioned that before, and they really haven't. They've only done Hopkins, and Darby didn't really walk for that much, so they haven't been able to do that, and they're kind of staying pat and, like, looking at the wide receiver market and seeing where they're going to swing. Is it going to be a Galladay? Is it going to be a Juju Smith-Schuster? They're trying to help out Terry, and I think also they're going to be underrated in the tight end market, where there's Hunter Henry and Gerald Everett still available to be signed. I personally would really like Gerald Everett on our team and thinking he'd be a good complement to Logan Thomas. So there are some moves that have yet to be made, which they could be trying, but they could also have had some major swings that have just failed that we're never going to hear from. They're not going to reach the light of day. So I think I'm okay so far. It's only the first day of legal tampering that you first heard of today. So it's an interesting kind of time that the only person we signed is a kicker who's been pretty erratic this year. So, yeah, let's hope tomorrow morning there starts to be something. What do you think about this, Chris? I know your Ravens have actually been kind of kicking butt this offseason in this legal tampering period. They've had a lot of mid-to-good players leave, getting comp picks, but they also re-signed Kevin Zeitler, who I thought was a really good guard for very cheap.
Hell yeah.
Also, the Ravens guard play over the years have been terrible since their really good one retired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say about that.
But would you say that an approach like the Ravens is what the Washington football team is kind of doing? But
it might be. I mean, you know your players the best.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the time when these players walk, the team just doesn't have confidence in them to continue to perform. Like, you see your players play in and out during practice. So I think there's part of that that happens when teams let these good players walk. So
yeah. What do you think, Nick?
About what?
About just, like, the approach to free agency, and also, like, what guys do you want to see signed that are still out there?
I don't know. I'm kind of...
I think we could explore this down the road, but for now, let's move on.
We'll figure it out later.
Let's talk about... Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about Nationals baseball, shall we?
Yeah.
So first things first, want to just get a quick headline out there. So based on the context of the world and how it's going right now, and we're seeing the rate of vaccinations pick up tremendously, the mayor of D.C., Muriel Bowser, has announced that for any D.C. sports team, they could potentially have fans in stadiums so long as there are COVID-safe precautions in place. So this potentially could mean that the Nats, and this it is cutting it short because opening day is in, what, 2 weeks? But there is potential for the Nats to host people at opening day. Hopefully they don't pull a Rangers and decide to be like, ah! But, you know, there is potential there for the Nats to do opening day so long as there are COVID-safe guidelines.
Yeah, I mean, they can only have 5,000.
So is it 5,000? Like, sure. I'm not really sure how they differentiate, but it's just, like, first come, first serve, or is it...
No,
like...
I doubt it. I'm sure they'll have some...
Now, what they're probably going to do is similar to how, like, other places that are currently doing live events... like they'll probably offer up clusters of tickets, and then they'll have those clusters sit together 6 feet social distance, like all around, and, you know, masked up at all times and stuff like that. So that's probably going to be the route that they're going to go. But moving forward to get some Nats news here, we got a couple things. We're in the middle of spring training. Bit of a fear. Steven Strasburg did have a little bit of a tweak in his leg. Playing. Kind of worrisome because Stras does have a little bit of an injury history, and well, we just
a lot of an
we
injury
have
history.
Invested a lot of money.
Injury history.
Yep. Yeah, and we did invest a lot of money into him, so, you know, that is definitely scary to see, but, you know, hopefully Strauss is all right. Hopefully it was just a minor tweak, because we definitely need it. We definitely need him healthy in the starting rotation if the Nats want to make a difference in the regular season.
So, yes, we.
But another one
need Steven Strasburg.
Kind of a short aside, but you know how, like, you're just perusing Twitter comments, and then you just see something stupid just like on the Strasburg injury. So I was just like, see, this is why we should have signed Rendon. He's always healthy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's just like kind of like those brainless comments of people that don't really know baseball. Just like saying, it's just like, oh, this guy who always gets injured, why'd you give him a long-term deal? That's pretty dumb. He's not going to get healthy after he gets signed.
Yeah, I mean...
Wait, what were they saying? To sign Rendon?
Yeah, they were saying this is why you should have signed Rendon. He's been healthy most of his career and has been an all-star. And Strasburg, you've seen him get injured a ton, so that was a dumb move.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the Steven Strasburg and his injury, they super need him because seeing how well Austin Voth, Joe Ross has been okay, but Austin Voth and Eric Fetty have done, I don't have a lot of confidence. And Joe Ross I have confidence, but calling up Fetty or Voth as the fifth guy in the case that Steven Strasburg goes down is worrisome. Cade Cavalli and Jackson Rutledge still need some more time. So if this becomes an actual thing, it's not going to be great for the Nats.
Just a minor tweak, but it's just one of those things where it's like Strasburg just has such a big history, and like sometimes something is a tweak, and then all of a sudden it's like a.
It's a full blown inflammation.
Month or 2 months or the whole year. I don't know.
It is definitely worrisome.
Yeah.
There is always a silver lining at the end of the dark tunnel. Another bit of spring training news involves one Victor Robles, who is looking real good, and honestly, it looks like he was putting in the work in the offseason. He got in great shape. Just visibly, he looks faster on the mound. And
why is he on the mound?
Not on the mound.
Around the bases.
long work day. Visibly,
like, I mean, we might have injury faster. Problems with Steven Strasburg, but I don't think we need to throw Victor Robles out there on the mound.
But like I was saying, Robles is looking visibly faster rounding the bases, and he's a threat. I think he could be a really big, really big threat in the lineup for sure.
He's come what do y'all think about since, that? He's come a long way since Chris called him fat in the off season.
He did look chunky in that video, to be honest.
It was on the Dominican ball, like it was like 3 grains of footage.
But no, he looks a lot faster, like Bruin kind of said. He looks a lot stronger at the plate. I mean, he's hitting .273 to start the spring training, which it is spring training, so we'll see if he continues. I mean, shit, Michael Taylor is playing out of his mind right now in Kansas City. I really doubt that he's going to keep that up. Those looks.
The wound is still fresh, Chris. Why have you dug in there?
He does this every year. Michael A. Taylor always plays out of his mind.
We've seen this talent, and we really regret him leaving our greatest player, Michael A. Taylor.
He always is nutty in spring training. I don't want to hear this.
You know where
maybe
else
it's like a
nutty?
Pressure thing. Like he just performs, but it's like, oh, this game doesn't matter.
You know where else he's nutty good? The World Series.
Oh, no, he's,
where
he's
he bats 1,000, one for one with a home run.
You know, there's a reason why
he
only
he's
got bat. That
he
one
don't
at
miss.
Bat.
He don't.
Pitchers cry seeing him.
Because he sucks.
At bat.
God, I'm done with this. Anyways, back to the actual Nationals that actually can help this team. Victor Robles does look a lot better. He looks a lot faster, and I think that'll carry over to his defensive play, which was pretty bad last year, honestly. After being the, like, far and away best center fielder in the MLB the season prior to that, going to not even top half, really, last season. Hopefully he can return to his 2018 form, or 2019 form, like a another first baseman the Nationals have by the name of Josh Bell. Hopefully both of them can return to their 2019 forms.
I'm going to say we were going to really struggle if Robles isn't back to that, just from the players that we have.
Well, there's another player that is continuing to play like ass over at third base. Defensively, he's been fine. At the plate, downright abysmal once again. Carter Kivum, 4 hits and 22 at-bats with the team. Yeah. not optimistic about him still.
When they had him on the trade block, do you think teams just called to laugh? It's like, really, you're trading Carter Kivum?
To go along with his 4 hits, he has 2 walks, 6 Ks.
Golly.
It's not great. Not great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is still some upside.
He never showed up. He was never that great. I mean, his best season was 2019, I guess, and he only played in 29 games. But even that season, he hit .279 with a .353 on base percentage. So even that's not that great.
He just not be a good player.
No, but he used to be like our top rated prospect. He was good in the minors.
Well, he was always going to be the top ranked prospect. But
because he was a first-round pick, right?
Oh, shit, no. 2019, he played in 11 games and hit for .128 average. And then last year, he played in 33 and hit for .202. So I guess technically he's
improving. He has shown improvement.
Because, well, this spring training, he's been terrible. But his best season was hitting .202. Given it was 33 games and it was during the shortened season, but...
Hasn't Zimmerman been playing pretty well this spring training?
Yeah, he's been solid. I mean, that's good to see because who knows, like, he's taken an entire year off and he's getting older. So it's nice to see that he is still performing at a major league level, even though it is spring training. But he is hitting .462 right now with a 1.731 OPS, which is pretty ridiculous. Like, he's not going to get that high of numbers at all. But he's already hit 3 home runs and 13 at-bats, so I'll give it to him. He's hitting the ball, and he definitely still deserves his spot on the team, which is good news for the Nationals all around.
One other key component. It's the last thing I want to wrap up with when it comes to the Nats. Currently, Scott Boras, or sorry, Juan Soto, is not able to come to an agreement with the Nationals front office. Pardon my slip of the tongue there. So, with that in mind, is it time to talk Trey Turner signing?
No. He's going to do the same thing as Juan Soto. I almost guarantee it.
Is he also represented by Boras?
He is not, but... No. Most agents kind of follow what Scott Boras does.
Boras seems like the blueprint.
And unless Trey Turner really, really, really finds a deal that he likes, Trey Turner doesn't really have, outside of winning the World Series with the Nats, he doesn't have that much of an emotional tie to DC. Even Steven Strasburg almost signed with San Diego after being with the Nats for a gazillion years, so he doesn't have like that emotional tie. So there's not a chance in hell that we sign him before he hits the open market after arbitration.
Makes sense. All right, want to quickly wrap things up, but before we do need to discuss the Wizards here real quick. We saw them looking real, real nice going into the All-Star break, but since then they have cooled off significantly. They're currently 14-23, and they're looking at about the fourth worst in the division. Personally, I don't see any problem with the coaching. I think the coaching has been phenomenal.
What a joke!
Everyone's got jokes.
Yeah, that was the best joke you've told all day, Scott Brooks. That ship has sailed finally. I think I was the last one on this podcast that had confidence in him.
Steadfast.
I know. Rahul's been on the fire.
I hated this man.
Rahul was on the fire Scott Brooks bandwagon when it was like just a cart. And it was him and the donkey. That was the entire bandwagon. Now it's just
Rahul was building the bandwagon. Like, let's be honest here.
he was building it with his own hammer and nails.
There were seeds of dissent that I've spread, and now everyone has realized that Scott Brooks sucks. Even though when we signed a new contract, pretty much everyone didn't like that move either. So, yeah, he sucks.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about the Wizards. Yeah. Fire Scott Brooks.
Couple other things. Troy Brown Jr. is currently on the trading block ahead of the trade deadline, which is happening in about 10 days on the 25th. You know, do we keep Troy Brown? Is he getting shipped off? Do you think we're going to get anything out of him? What do you think?
We're not going to get much out of him.
Well,
I'm just glad he found his dog.
I think
that's all I have to say about
Troy. Yeah, Brown. I was going to say that was a story on Twitter for a while.
He lost his dog in New York, and it was, or not in New York. He
DC.
Lost his, yeah, in DC. He lost his dog in the neighborhood, but then it was found. I'm happy. He found his dog. Now we can trade him.
That's a feel good story, like Alex Smith, yep. Except on a minor scale.
Yep.
It's a much minor scale.
All right, but you know a couple of things with the Wizards. I mean, other than the abysmal coaching, is that you got, you have a team that seems more competent. It just needs a better coach. One of the things that is a big storyline in this season, obviously, is John Wall versus Russell Westbrook, and also how well has Russell Westbrook gelled with the team and with Bradley Beal in particular. So at this point in the season, are y'all still like, nah, don't like Westbrook? Are you a fan of Westbrook, or are you still need more before you can make a decision?
I still don't think it was worth giving up the first round pick. Outside of that,
I feel like we'd be in the same situation with either Wall or Westbrook, but yeah. The first round pick hurts.
I think Westbrook is performing a little bit better than John Wall would have. I think if they had given a second or a third, I think that would have been the most fair trade.
It is a protected first round, as we keep mentioning, but
it's
still.
Like 2023, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there are third.
I just want to point out that the Wizards. I just want to point out that the Wizards are doing better than the Rockets right now.
They are doing better, but also the Rockets have given up James Harden. They're barely a shell of a team, just Boogie and John Wall.
So, yeah, no, it's very true.
No, it is only two. You're right. So I think a second round pick, it would have been better, but, you know, whatever.
Well, let's see if the Wizards can recover from this little slump they've got into. And if they don't, well, let's see. Let's hope that the offseason we see better coaching come out. And with that, we are going to wrap things up. Thank you all for listening to the DC Sports Brain Trust. My name is Varun. I've been your host and moderator. Joined, as always, by three of my good friends, the best damn sports analysts around, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We will have the links to those in the description of the episode. Until then, keep supporting DC Sports, and we'll see you next time. I'm gonna be honest, I could not hear half of the shit that was being said, especially from Nick. I don't know if it was a Discord thing, but...
Were you just guessing at what we said?
It was probably just Chris Mike.